When did Ilya come and read here, Matt? Ilya Kaminsky. That's February. I heard this poet and met him read this summer up at Breadloaf at the Writers' Conference up in Vermont, and the reading was so powerful that I decided to write a poem about it. And I think that the poem speaks for itself, but I kind of want you just to imagine this space. If we're in a, imagine it as a kind of a theater. It's called the Little Theater, very long space with a stage and a poet. So behind me would be a stage, and you guys would be in these seats that would go gradually up in rafters to a tech booth at the top that is built for lighting and stuff. And on the sides of the theater are just screen doors and open to the outside up into the mountains. So it's a very beautiful space. Hearing Ilya read for the first time. 10 minutes before the reading begins, the place nearly empty, the wind picked up outside, bumping the screen doors lightly against their stops. The young Russian poet is shuffling from seat to seat, dropping a handout under each folding chair. Tall, fleshy, his hair a rumpled shock, he extracts a stapled handout from its droopy pile and drops the sheaf through his sightline. Sitting under the tech booth, I watch the poet make his way up to my row. He's all out. People will have to share. Earlier, a ripe pear rolled into my classroom like a hand grenade, a beautiful woman chasing it into the dusty corner. As it does in the afternoon, the little theater fills quickly, excited talk now layered in the air. When the spot comes up, a well of light overflows the podium's basin, and the crowd breaks into exuberant applause. The poet doesn't read, per se, a friend whispers into my ear, but proclaims. He's hard of hearing, so has a hard time monitoring his tonal range, the poet explains, nearly unintelligible through the slush of his accent and shy nervousness. When he starts the first poem, a love poem, we struggle to focus on the words on the page. The sound guys scramble to accommodate the poet's delivery, alternately high-pitched and guttural, how he steps in and out of the mic's range. Once he places the page in front of his face, a sunflower swaying in the breeze. The poet reads and proclaims, and sings like a cantor. He writes of God and making love on the kitchen floor. When he kisses his lover, her stomach tightens. He's part Joseph Brodsky, part runner-up in the poetry slam for angelic deaf mutes. Truth-teller, summoner of the gods of earnestness, lightheartedness, and joy, he calls us all to the table of the exalted moment. His allotted 20 minutes go by, draped in the shawl of timelessness. We are one mind, wrapped in communal attention, happy in one place as we'll ever be. Later, we will gather on the sun-drenched porch, buzzed from the reading and strong drinks, talking madly through smile-jammed faces. A few of us will stare out mutely into the field. As for the unlucky souls who arrive late and stand outside the theater, unable to see in, sans handout, they are lost at the edge of the sea, only wave lap in their ears, gull screech and sun glare. When he's done, the poet steps from the podium, dazed. Wiping its drunken eyes, the crowd lifts its head and cheers like tree branches in the wind. Just a small hint of compassion and burgeoning fear for the pretty young novelist who now steps into the light, who herself must summon all her own gods to this replete moment, who must continue despite everything, laying out her solid, unmusical lines of prose. She gave a great reading, actually, but I did not envy her having to read after that.